Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane. About to break down this Wednesday slate for you guys. Early slate there as well. It would be nice if they had all five games on the early slate. They don't. They're split into like super early and regular early. I don't know why they do that. But if you're playing the early slate, there's some interesting spots to go. Definitely some pitchers worth attacking out there on the West Coast. So enjoy the early slate. Last night, whoo, man, massive scores. Massive scores all across the board. Obviously, Kluber and Sale destroying their opponents. Kluber pitches a 9-inning game again. One earned off of Charlie Blackmon's solo dinger in the first at bat, and then he shut him down from there. Goes for 67 fantasy points, but 67 fantasy points wasn't enough because Chris Sale went out and did 73 over 8 innings. Wow. I mean, you know, what a special thing to have those two pitchers side by side in their respective matchups, be able to watch them. You know, just really cool. It's just really, really cool for baseball fans to be able to see how dominant these young pitchers are, especially not young pitchers, but these pitchers are. But especially in a time when, you know, we felt like the home run ball was making a resurgence and it was a hitter's league maybe again. And, you know, you get these guys with just these filthy breaking balls and they're still dominant pitchers out here in the world, and they are just crushing people. I had 100% Kluber. That was the universe telling me that Chris said, don't forget about Chris Sale. You know, I'm only 6-point difference, but you know, that does make a difference. It does make a difference when, my cash lineup is hits 175 and you're not in the cash. Craziness. There was a massive night for scores. What are you going to do? You know, you had grand slams. You had a number of guys double dong. The Max Kepler double dong was almost inexplicable in my mind. That team, the Twins, not inexplicable. I mean, 2,900 for a batter in the two hole against who is a clearly poor pitcher makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's just a good play. It is. It's a good play. Garza's metrics, not as bad on paper as some of the other pitchers on the slate, but, you know, clearly struggles with contact issues. And, you know, I think one of the things that probably goes overlooked is the quality of that ballpark. Minnesota, for what it's worth, is actually a halfway decent ballpark for hitters. It really isn't that bad of a ballpark for hitters. So in that respect, it was 80 degrees. It was a decent night, you know, to attack the bats in that park and Kepler took advantage of it. I'm trying to pull up exactly what the rating is. Oh, okay. Well, they're in Miller today. So, yeah, it makes sense. You know, interesting too. Hey, Padres blowing up, continuing to take advantage of that great ballpark. We saw the Phillies do well last night, take advantage of that ballpark. Odubel Herrera almost hit for the cycle. He was just one away from the triple. Single, double, walk, homer. You know, taking advantage of the fact that that's a park for lefty power and that's that, you know, Braves offense, just absolutely completely terrible. That Seattle Oakland game, I was really pleased with the outcome there. I was really pleased with the Seattle Oakland game. We saw dingers from Chris Davis, Ryan Healy, Chris Davis in the first inning. Of course, it's the only Oakland piece that I didn't stack. Frustrating. But I was all over Ryan Healy. Ryan Healy, the movement of Yonder Alonso is going to create space in the lineup for Matt Chapman and Ryan Healy. And we have to take advantage of those guys as a platoon. They're really good. They're really good hitters. They really are. And Oakland is a solid. They're not a bad baseball team. Like they have moments when you should be playing them, and specifically pitchers that you can take advantage of in that division. I mean, you saw what they did in a couple of those games in San Francisco. We saw what they did to Ariel Miranda last night. You know, two homers, six earned off of Ariel Miranda. You know, they are getting the ball up. They're elevating it. They're hitting fly balls in the last 30 days against left-handed pitching. They're not striking out the same way. So they're certainly a team to watch. Certainly a team to watch and keep your eye out for when they're in good matchups. Other than that, man, you know, hey, Jake Lamb, Grand Slam. It's kind of fun. The desert continues to be a great place to hit baseballs. I don't know how it is that, you know, the first time that I didn't consider Justin Turner, he went double long. But what are you going to do? I play Justin Turner more than anybody because on paper he's just like one of the best fantasy baseball plays that there is. But that's enough review. That's enough review. We have I'm going to talk the main slate here. I'm going to attack the main slate for you guys. We got to jump in and see what Vegas has to say about tonight. All right. So, looking at the main slate, there are, 10 games on the main slate tonight. And like I said, if you want to play the early slate, go for it. There's some interesting spots to attack. I would definitely attack the Mets. I would definitely attack the Mets versus Perez. I mean, Perez just bad. Just really bad. You got to attack the righties there. Yoenis Cespedes underpriced, 3.2K. Drubal Cabrera, Wilmer Flores underpriced. I would definitely attack the Mets righties right there. I would attack the Mariners against Jarrell Cotton. The Mariners lefties, Yonder Alonso still underpriced. They're all basically the same price as they were last night. And then this Baltimore-LA game. I think Baltimore, you know, Manny Machado and John Scope overpriced in this situation. But if you can fit one of them in against Scribner, massive fly ball rate, good weather there too. Don't need to touch AT&T. It's just too low scoring. And that's it. That's it. Those are the five games. That's where I'm going with it. Oh, yeah. By the way, the Indians. Yeah, play the Indians. Jason Kipnis. Yeah. Jose Ramirez underpriced, man. Underpriced Jose Ramirez. I will take that all day. And I don't know why. I guess it's just because Kipnis is back in the lineup, but Bradley Zimmer's back in the seven hole, which just is stupid to me. He's had so much pop. You give the seniority to Kipnis and play the system. You know, that's Francona's loyalty, I guess. Anyway, but that I would play Zimmer as well in that, because why not? He's been excellent. You know, you take a little bit of a bump as far as the plate appearances batting in a seven hole, but this team, you know, is going to get on base and not going to strike out. So, all right, sorry. Main slate, here we go. Jumping in. First game of the night in Washington. The Nationals, just a disappointment on the whole. I mean, they are an offense that is, and I was saying this on Twitter to somebody, to Jayhawk Mayer, friend of the show, listens to the show, talked to him a lot on Twitter. I said, you know, we were talking about the O'Grady thing. I made a mistake yesterday. I said O'Grady has the Nationals number, and then I completely forgot that O'Grady left the game in the second with that injury, or the first, excuse me, which is just silly. I distinctly remember going, great, Anthony Rendon hasn't even seen O'Grady, and I have all Anthony Rendon. Anyway, Adam Conley versus Gio Gonzalez. Obviously, the Nats are favored here, but they are just stale. They're stale. This is what I said to Jayhawk Mayer. I was like, they're just not. I can't tell if it's just like Bryce is just like, I can't hit a home run every single day. Brian Goodwin, maybe a little bit of flash in the pan. He's cooled off a little bit. Daniel Murphy sat the day yesterday, so he'll be back, I think, today. You know, I mean, against a lefty, though, you do have just underpriced guys who statistically smash. And it's Kendrick, it's Zim, and it's Rendon. And that is not a hard stack. After they totally trolled everyone the other night, there's a absolutely reason to possibly go back to him in this one. 5.4 runs implied. Gio will take the hill against the Marlins. He owns the Marlins. We will talk about it. Gio chalk night. Yankees Jays, 9 runs projected in Toronto. Of course, Josh Donaldson double dong. Makes total sense. He destroys CC Sabathia. He and Evan Longoria both own CC Sabathia. Had it in the cheat sheet. The issue really was that you basically got massive production out of first base, or you got massive production out of first base and third base. Everybody got massive production out of those positions. You know, between Freeman, Donaldson, Bregman, that everybody played, the chalk hit everywhere, right? So if you had Kluber and Sale and you had 2 home runs in your lineup, normally you're going, okay, nice, 70-point outing for my pitcher, 20 key points from those guys. I got a floor of, 120 points or something like that. It just wasn't enough. You had to have 2 or 3 more homers in your lineup to get anything done. Not to mention Altuve. Altuve's late homer. He could have double-donged, by the way. He just kept sending him in the outfield. Blue Jays, Yankees. I'm very distracted today. Masahiro Tanaka versus Nick Tepesh. I don't know how to say that. I guess we got to think about stacking the Yankees. They just released the starter, the Blue Jays did this morning. He wasn't initially in my research. So we could certainly look at the Yankees in this case, but they are cold. They are really, really kind of stale. Not a lot of homers recently. So, tread with caution, tread lightly, but they're definitely in play. Pirates, Tigers, 9.5 runs projected here in Comerica. Ivan Nova versus Justin Verlander. Tigers are favored in this one, just under 5 runs for them. 4.5 for the Pirates versus Verlander. I'm interested in Verlander. I think he's interesting tonight. We'll talk about it. Red Sox, Rays, 8.5 runs. Porcello versus Odorizzi. Red Sox favored get 4.3 runs, but the Rays getting 4.1. This is more, I think, about the Red Sox lack of offensive pop than anything. Okay, to be such a slight favorite in this case when Odorizzi, that's not completely fair, I guess, because Odorizzi and Porcello profile very similarly. Too much hard contact, too many fly balls, depressed K rate, but they do strike people out because they have velocity. So they're very similar. It's interesting, actually. I think Porcello just has the name recognition, right? Because why wouldn't he? I like both sides of this, and I'll talk about it. Padres, Reds, 9.5 runs projected here, 81 degrees in Great American. You know, guys, like when you have a team that has just such a massive ballpark boost like the Padres that have been red hot, I think we got to go to him. Some people are very interested in Asher Wojciechowski. Not me. I'm sorry. He's a reliever. The statistics, you look at it on paper, the numbers are inflated. His numbers as a starter are mediocre at best. We are seeing a Padres team that is streaking and in the last 30 days has been playing pretty good baseball, making a lot of solid contact. Some young guys who can clearly hit. They're underpriced. I'd much rather take advantage of their ballpark bump than pretend like Asher Wojciechowski is going to come out of the bullpen and throw 6 stellar innings against a team that clearly is taking advantage of their pitching staff in Cincinnati. Phillies, Braves, 9.5 runs projected here. Braves projected for 5 runs against Jared Eichhoff. Makes sense, but gosh, this team is so hard to get right. I think the only person you play on the Braves is Freddie. I mean, you can't play anybody else with any confidence whatsoever. I don't know why the Braves don't, switch up their batting order, maybe, try and get some new life up there, because it's just not really working for them. Phillies in this one, I don't know, against Newcomb. Newcomb actually has good stuff, and he suppresses hard contact. Now, he does give up walks. This game has a lot of rain in it, though. Okay, 50% chance basically from 6 all the way to 9 p.m., so you could have some weather issues in this one for sure, which would just, you know, I think with that in mind, you could just scratch this game off the slate and just say, okay, that's enough. Astros White Sox, 10 runs projected in guaranteed rate. Astros projected for a slate high 6 runs in this one. Heavy favorites with Colin McHugh on the mound. You know, he pitched really well against the Rays last time. He has good stuff. He's gotten hit, but he has good stuff versus Miguel Gonzalez. Miguel Gonzalez, not good. Barely got out of the second inning. Didn't even get out of the second inning against the Red Sox last week. That was Red Sox chalk night. You guys remember? Red Sox chalk night when it all worked and everybody was touting the fact that they played the Red Sox in Fenway Park against one of the worst pitchers in baseball. Guys, that's not hard. Twins Brewers, 10 runs projected. Bartolo versus Brandon Woodruff. Obviously Brewers favored here against Bartolo, but we're going to talk about old Bartolo Claus in this one. Woodruff, asshole, trolled me. I was all over attacking this kid from the gate. And he gave up bases loaded in the first inning and in the second inning, back to back, got all the way through the order twice in that Rays game. Went through the order twice in 2 innings, 1 through 9. Pitched 50 pitches to get through 2 innings. And then settled down. Found a rhythm, struck out 6, didn't give up 1 earned run, which is insane, because the Rays just tilting me into oblivion. I don't trust Woodruff, but I like him. I think he's interesting, especially at that price. There's upside in attacking these Twins, because I will stand by the fact that I do not think the Twins are that good this year, and I think they are stale right now. I think they're just tired, and yes, Eddie Rosario and Max Kepler both double-donged last night. Is it going to happen again? It could. Could you get some lefty power off of Woodruff? It's just if the lefties in Tampa Bay aren't hitting Woodruff, then what makes you think that Max Kepler and Eddie Rosario are going to hit him? I mean, those lefties have way more power. The difference being the ballpark, really. Which makes a lot of sense if you're just saying, hey, there's a higher likelihood that they get it out in Milwaukee, one of the best parks for lefty power and on the slate. Yes, that's true. That's true. And we obviously will talk about the Brewers offense. Kansas City, St. Louis, 8.5 runs projected in Busch Stadium, 82 degrees in St. Louis. Trevor Cahill versus Mike Leake. Cards favored for 4.5 runs here versus Cahill. This game goes completely overlooked and underplayed. Completely. No one plays this game, because no one really knows what to make of it. I think it's got a lot of leverage. The prices are up on a lot of players. You know, Matt Carpenter and Tommy Pham are expensive. Mike Moustakas is really expensive. Nobody plays this game. If you want one of the better pivots on the field, I think that this game probably goes under 10% owned across the slate. Dodgers, Diamondbacks. 8.5 runs projected in Chase. Hammer the over. It went over last night, didn't it? What was the final score? It had to have gone over last night, right? Nine. Oh, ooh. I think it hit 9 on the head. I mean, last night, by the way, St. Louis rolled. This team continues to score. That game, I think St. Louis is hot right now. Cahill has struggled. I think you can stack St. Louis at home in this one and know that you're going to get leverage on the field. Jed Yurko finally woke up last night. He's cheap. Paul DeJong continues to be really powerful. Dexter Fowler is just too inexpensive. He's 2.8K. He has some of the best metrics on this team. Batting in the six hole, I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. Anyway, that's enough about that game. Dodgers Diamondbacks, 8.5 runs projected here. Alex Wood versus Zach Greinke. We can't play Alex Wood anymore. He's not striking anyone out. He's going up against a Diamondbacks team that can't really hit lefties, I guess. But there is a guy named JD Martinez that's pretty good at baseball. Paul Goldschmidt, also a decent righty, decent baseball player, I guess. AJ Pollock, so-so at bat. I'm kidding. Totally kidding. The one thing to keep your eye on, guys, is if Adam Rosales... God, I said that poorly. Adam, the shortstop, is up in the top of this lineup as a possible leadoff bat because the Diamondbacks do weird shit with their lineup all the time. 2.2K. You kind of have to play a 2.2K leadoff bat in the desert, you know, even though it's against Alex Wood, even though it's against the Dodgers. Wood just isn't striking anybody out. He's giving up some ground. He's getting more ground balls and stuff like that. He's just not very exciting. Dodgers side of this is interesting against Greinke. Sure is. Jock Peterson, so cheap. So cheap. He hit one to the track last night, by the way. Hit one to the track. Like, Jock Peterson at 2.5K in Chase Field against a righty with hard contact issues. Give me a break. Especially if he's in that five or that six hole like he has been against righties recently. I mean, he wasn't last night. Well, he was in the six last night, I think. Anyway, all right, that's enough. Let's go ahead into the player breakdown, figure out who we love. Who do you love? Okay, so pitching, I guess I'll start with the two highest priced arms. That's Greinke and Wood. And I'm going to explain why it is that I just don't feel the need to play them, even though Greinke has one of the better strikeout rates on the slate. I just don't necessarily want to take Greinke in a situation when he goes to Chase Field. He just gave up 6 earned to the Cubs. Okay. Does that show fatigue? Does that show location issue? Does it show that eventually this hard contact regression is going to come back to bite him? Okay. He's had some good ones. He had a nice start in St. Louis. He had an excellent start there. He's clearly still got great metrics. I'm not going to take that away from him. Some of the better metrics on the slate. But in a situation versus the Dodgers, who are a relatively low strikeout team, who have a ton of power, who can totally unravel you at any single moment, I just don't know that you need Greinke, okay? I just don't know that you need Greinke. Wood, K-rate literally cut in half every single start. Every single start, his K-rate has dropped. It's plummeting. I think it's arm fatigue. I don't know what it is, but he barely got to 30 points against the Braves, who are one of the worst offenses in baseball right now. Why is he going to do that against the Diamondbacks in the desert? There's no reason to play Alex Wood. There's no reason to play if he, you know, and worst of all, he is on a team in a staff that if he gets knocked around, he will get pulled in the fifth, and they have no problem using the bullpen to match up and save his arm. So no reason to play these guys. I just don't see the reason. I think for me, the number one pitcher on the slate has got to be Masahiro Tanaka versus the Blue Jays. I usually like picking on Tanaka because I know he's going to give up a home run, but Tanaka is crazy in the last month, like unbelievable, phenomenal, 32% strikeout rate with a 1% walk rate, 1%, 1.6% walk rate, 2.5 Sierra and XFIP. It's just insanity what he's done in the month of July. He is on a heater. He's approaching, you know, like that 30% level. Once you get up there, then you're approaching, you know, your Klubers and your Sales and your, you know, he's obviously not that, but he's very good. You know, he's certainly right now as good a pitcher as Zach Greinke, right? No one's going to argue with that. The home run issue still there. Definitely. Definitely. He's going to give one up. No doubt in my mind, someone will hit him, probably just in smoke. You know, and away from Yankee Stadium, he definitely struggles more than at home. He, for whatever reason, even though that's such a bad ballpark, he pitches great in Yankee Stadium. You know, he has faced the Blue Jays twice this year. They have a 20% strikeout rate. They're a below average offense against right-handed pitching on the season. Here's the thing that I love the most. We know Tanaka throws junk. He's going to throw the slider. He's going to throw the cutter. He's going to throw the sinker. He's going to throw the change. He's going to throw a curve. He's going to throw them all. You know, even if he only throws them every once in a while, like two or three times a game, dude is going to throw everything. By the way, if you haven't already, there is a story on my timeline that a New York Yankees reporter wrote, David Adler, I believe, about Sonny Gray and how Sonny Gray makes up new pitches during a game. That's insanity. He has such a good connection with his fingers and his feel that he will, throughout the course of the game, adjust pressures slightly and move his finger ever so minutely or try to gain more spin on a certain pitch. And if it looks and feels filthy and the ump is calling it, he'll just start throwing it. And they're like, what is that? Well, they're like, apparently he told an A's pitching coach, he was like, yeah, I found if I move my finger over just a touch, it was filthy, so I just kept throwing it. Just crazy. I mean, that's crazy cool. Just a really good story, really good read. It's on my Twitter. Posted it yesterday, and I think it's by, like I said, I think it's by David Adler. So if you're on Google, you just fire that up, David Adler, Sonny Gray. Really, really good story. He's a very interesting creative pitcher. Tanaka, the junk from Tanaka, right? Very, very similar in all the breaking balls and stuff. The Blue Jays don't hit anything that moves. Guys, listen to these rankings against breaking balls. 29th in the league against the slider, 23rd in the league against the cutter, 28th against the curve, 20th against the change, and 26th against the sinker. This team can't hit anything except for the two-seamer. And the two-seamer, they're not even that good at. They can't hit anything. They don't hit it. They only hit a four-seam fastball. Okay? And it's just Tanaka's in a really good spot to throw a very nice game. He's reasonably priced. He's going to generate whiffs. Or they're just going to generate ground balls. And I'm just not scared. I haven't been scared of the Toronto Blue Jays all year long. They are a home run or bust team. They're not going to generate lots of base runners. They aren't going to, you know, Russell Martin, Kendrys Morales, and Jose Bautista are really having terrible years. So if it's Josh Donaldson and Justin Smoke that I have to worry about, that's fine. Tanaka against a righty, very, very solid. So splits are very good for Tanaka, by the way. I have no problem with Tanaka in this situation. I think he's very solid. I think people go to him too, because, you know, he's been good in July. That's no secret. People know. So I don't think it's like you're going to get Tanaka and it's a big secret. People know. The other guy that I really like is Justin Verlander. Same thing, right? Older guy, kind of, you know, in the same boat as Tanaka right now against Pittsburgh at home. He's having a bit of a renaissance in July. I mean, the numbers are really good for him. He's pitching possessed. And interesting, I made a note in my notes last night, and I forget what it was about. I don't know why I made a note here, but I will say this because it's worth saying. So last night, or yesterday, I was listening. I don't know if anybody listens to the Fangraphs podcast, Effectively Wild. Very good. Just precisely and wonderfully exactly what you would expect out of a Fangraphs podcast. Snarky, highbrow baseball conversation from people who know so much about baseball. So it's fun. It's really fun to listen to. Really good. Effectively Wild. Just passes the time. And they did a couple recent live shows at the Sabre Seminar, which, you know, Society of Advanced Baseball Research or American Baseball Research. That's what Sabre stands for, by the way, in Sabermetrics. They did a live show with pitcher Fernando Perez, who was on the Rays for a while, who was an outfielder for a while, and he is just an amazingly funny on-air personality. Really, 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 really good. Really good listen. Listen to that. You know, I don't know how that connects to Justin Verlander against Pittsburgh. I'm not completely sure at all, but very, 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 very fun podcast note that I made somewhere. For some reason, I wrote it down in my notes here. I just wanted to say that. Back to Verlander. In July, This is really interesting because this is kind of when the switch flipped for him, okay? He had two back-to-back starts against Cleveland, one in Cleveland and one at home. The first one, he got destroyed. Three innings, eight earned runs, annihilated. It was kind of peak, like, uh-oh, is Verlander losing it, right? And we had seen that, right? We had seen the hard contact issues. We had seen the home runs. He had been getting smashed. Cleveland really, really did some damage to him. He came back out his next start against Cleveland. It was a flip-flop series. And he owned him, you know, compared to his first start. It wasn't, you know, perfect, flawless, but it was six innings. He K'd six and only one earned run. Since that start, okay, he's had four starts since that start. His K rate has jumped above 30% twice, and he's averaging a 27% strikeout rate. The home runs, one per game, sure, just about. The hard contact and fly balls, they're there because we know Justin Verlander's a fly ball pitcher. He's a lot like Scherzer, high spin fastball. He gets guys to pop up, you know, power ball, you know, throws the ball, still throws the ball ridiculously hard. Yeah, it's there, but there's no base runners. There's no walks. There's no earned runs. He's not getting blown up in the way that he was, right? He's not loading the bases and then giving up the three-run shot. He's been phenomenal. And he gets a low strikeout team in Pittsburgh, sure. But massive ballpark in Comerica, at home, the ability to go deep into this game and just pound the strike zone against a team that ranks in the bottom 25 against the fastball and the slider. They're not going to do well against a righty with a fastball and a slider. They're just not. They are not that great against power pitchers. I just don't see them. They're not scaring me. If McCutchen takes some yard, McCutchen takes some yard. But you haven't seen a home run from any of the lefties in any recent history. I don't see Verlander. He's stared. And in those starts, by the way, it was Baltimore, it was Kansas City, teams with power, right? Teams that you think would, you know, if they get a guy who's giving up fly balls and home runs, they could end up in their seats. And it wasn't the case. He's been pitching extremely well. Houston, too. He fanned Houston. It's not like he was pitching against, you know, cellar dwellers, and Pittsburgh just not scary. So I think Verlander is a very solid pivot from Tanaka. I think those two, as kind of unsexy as they are, I think they provide a very nice floor. I think they both have outcomes close to 40 points tonight. I think that's a very solid, safe number. And that's a nice number from a $9,500 pitcher. I think they're both about $9,300 and $9,500. The other one that you got to look at is Gio. He's right there. I don't know how they haven't moved his price on FanDuel, but I guess whatever. Versus Miami. I mean, the fact is Gio just owns this team. You got to think about a guy who has had an amazing history. He's been wildly consistent all year long. I have no idea how. His advanced numbers are not that good. But again, it doesn't matter because there are pitchers in this league who are better real-life pitchers than they are based on the numbers. Andrew Cashner, Gio Gonzalez, you know, a lot of these guys who manage games, they don't get blown up. Fucking Bartolo, dude. Bartolo is that guy right now. He is that guy. So Gio, he just owns this team, okay? He's too consistent. He's 23% strikeout rate, 9% swinging strike rate. It's been that way all year long. I mentioned this last time, guys. He gets better as the game goes along, which is a sign of an experienced pitcher. Okay, he gets better as the game goes along. He's excellent with runners in scoring position. He's excellent when he gets ahead in a count. He's excellent in the second and third time through an order. If he gets hit early and often, and then it's over for him. But that's only happened like three or four times this year. He's put up 40 FanDuel points against them three times this year against Miami. He almost pitched a full, you know, no-no, or excuse me, not a no-no, but a, was it a no-no? Yeah, it was a no-no. He almost pitched the no-no against them, remember? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It always seems like he's primed for regression because he has an xFIP and a Sierra that's higher than his ERA. There's a lot of his BABIP is really, really low. You always are like, Gio's going to get hit. It's going to happen. It's going to be over. It could happen at any moment. You're right. But I don't know when. I don't know where. And it's hard to bet against a guy right now who's pitching this well. who's pitching this just consistently. It's not that he's overwhelming. It's not that he's overpowering. I'm not going to say he's elite, but he is pitching very, very well. He only gives up 3% barrel rate. He's been, you know, keeping the walks down to 7%. He's good. He's good. I don't know what else to say. Sorry, 9%, flirting with 9% walk rate. 29% hard contact. That's great. So Gio versus Miami, why not? You know, I think that's an easy one. It's a layup, 8,900, another 40-point floor. Those three guys in cash games, just kind of figure out who you think is the safest or has the highest floor. A couple dart throws. There's three guys down below that price point that are really interesting tournament options who could easily all get themselves to 30 or 40 points that I think are intriguing as well. First is Sean Newcomb. I talk about Sean Newcomb all the time, and maybe I shouldn't, but I think this kid is good. He has K's, man. He's got strikeouts. He's shown it. He had 7 strikeouts and seven walks against the Dodgers last time. 7 walks is terrible. Terrible. Absolutely rough. But 7 strikeouts is... there's clearly something here that the kid has that he just can't quite harness. And I think, you know, the day that he finds it and he goes 7 innings, 2 walks, 7 Ks, 1 earned, you want to be there because he's 7,300 and he gets the Phillies. Okay. They're going to match his K rate at 23%. They lack power. They lack the discipline that the Dodgers have. We know they've been playing much better. I get it. But Newcomb just doesn't have the same batted ball issues that Tehran has. Okay. Tehran has massive home run problems in SunTrust. You know, we're talking about 2.2 home runs per 9. Woodruff is almost below 1. At home, he's got 1.4 home runs per 9. Away, it's 0.4. So all in all, you're talking about 1 home run per 9. This kid has 1 home run per 9. XFIP against lefties is 3.6. It's clearly the righties who are generating the walks. Hard contact, 31 and 29%. You know, not giving up a ton of fly balls, 2-to-1 fly, almost 2-to-1 ground ball to fly ball ratio to lefties. So you take away Aaron Althier because he's on the DL, and you have, you know, Cesar Hernandez and Freddy Galvis who are just productive. They're just productive. Those guys are one of the best 1-2s in the game right now. That's a massive overstatement. I apologize. I like them. I like them. I think they're productive for a terrible baseball team. I think Freddy Galvis and Cesar Hernandez are a good fit. Yeah, you're right, Sean. They're better than George Springer and Jose Altuve. Sorry. Overstatement. Too much love for the Phils. They helped me out a lot last night. But I think Newcomb could do work against them here. Do they have, you know, if Aaron Althier was in the lineup, then I'd be a little bit more nervous. I would. But, you know, against lefties in the last 30 days, the Phillies are below average, right? 23% strikeout rate, 97 WRC plus, 147 WOBA, you know. Right in the middle of the pack here. Right in the middle of the pack. You know, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Texas. Yankees are below them. Interesting. The Mets have struggled. They're down here in the last 30 days. It's just kind of these offense that are just kind of cooling off, you know, against lefties. And I think that's Philadelphia right now. You know, they just... There's moments when they're really good and they take advantage of bad pitchers. And there's moments when they can't do anything. So I think Newcomb is interesting. Woodruff. Yes. I got to talk about Woodruff. 6,600. I'm interested in Woodruff. you know, Minnesota to me just is not that threatening, and I've talked about them. Woodruff went out against the Rays, generated 12% swinging strike rate. I already talked about it. He walked a shit ton of people in the first innings, and he got hit hard. Well, he didn't get hit hard, but he gave up base runners. You know, how he got out of it, I have no idea. All it would have taken was one double for this kid to unravel, and the Rays couldn't do it. You know, and I think part of that is, you know, you hammer your fastball and you're throwing 94 miles an hour. That's good stuff. And he's, you know, that's what he is. Fastball, slider, change, classic righty, power righty. He's just going to hammer that against Minnesota. Minnesota just doesn't really scare me as an offense. And I think, you know, this ballpark does. Do I think that this kid is this good? Not really, but he's a very highly touted prospect. So there's a lot of people who are smarter than me that say he is this good. You know, I think he's very similar to Jake Faria, right? Power righty with a nasty slider and a changeup. You know, that's what he is. So I think Woodruff is definitely in play. And then the last cheap guy is McHugh. Colin McHugh for the Astros. And, you know, getting I told you, by the way, my Keuchel prediction that he would probably, this would be the start where he figured it out, wrong. Once again, the White Sox prove we are not idiots. We are professional baseball players, and we are going to be good at some point. We can take advantage of pitchers with problems. Rick Porcello, they took advantage of. Dallas Keuchel, they took advantage of. E-Rod, they took advantage of. Not to the point that they can actually win a baseball game, but enough that they make that pitcher struggle. Colin McHugh, however, you know, interesting. 25% strikeout rate, 12% swinging strike rate, and he's done it over a larger sample. So if you're debating between McHugh and Woodruff, I think McHugh probably is more in play, especially against the White Sox here. You know, as a righty, you know, against the White Sox, They're bottom of the barrel, 71 WRC plus in the last 30 days, 27% strikeout rate. So if there were ever a time to, you know, attack, it's a cheap pitcher in kind of what is a volatile matchup. And, you know, the nice thing about McHugh is he just faced down a team that's much better than this in the race. And he has, you know, very solid splits, you know, very, very decent splits. You know, he only struggles with lefties. You know, the press K rate to lefties, higher XFIP to lefties, higher walk rate to lefties. But there's no lefties on this team. There's no lefties on the White Sox. So, you know, you'll take the, you know, the fly balls are an issue. The fly balls are an issue against righties, that's for sure. It's a 60% fly ball rate to righties. And that worries me. But I think that, you know, you have three starts for this guy, three starts in the last two earned runs against teams that have much more to offer as far as hard contact in Detroit and Tampa Bay. Now, Detroit is a really good comp right here, right? A team that with a bunch of righties who every once in a while will take advantage of a pitcher as a right-hander. But in general, they swing too much at righties, right? I mean, that's kind of Detroit. That's why you play Chad Kuhl. And Chad Kuhl is rolling until he gave up three runs. God, man, Chad Kuhl was rolling, man. He was keeping up with Sale and Kluber, and then three runs, and he left, and he didn't pitch a complete game and get double-digit strikeouts. So maybe he's not as good as those guys. I don't know. I mean, guys, don't pressure me to make a, you know, a Chad Kuhl comparison to Corey Kluber. I'm just not going to do it. Okay. But yeah, I mean, he went six innings, one earned and seven Ks against Detroit. I don't think that's very reasonable for McHugh here against the White Sox. Very reasonable, similar comp. And he did the same thing against Tampa Bay, six and six, one earned. So that's a great, I think McHugh is very much in play. So it's, yeah, you get three guys in the kind of top tier, Verlander, Masahiro Tanaka, Gio, great. You kind of know exactly what you're going to get from all of them. It feels very similar. And then three guys in the bottom tier who could honestly pitch the exact same game as those other three guys. Newcomb, Woodruff, and McHugh. I think Newcomb is probably third place on this list. I like him the most, but Newcomb probably third place on this list. I think it's probably McHugh, Woodruff, Newcomb. Newcomb's just the walk issue is just too much. And McHugh is the best matchup. Although, I don't know, because... Yeah, he does. I was going to say, I mean, Philadelphia without Aaron Althea, it's just, there's not much there against lefties. There really isn't. That's it. Okay, good. Let's move on to the sticks and let's figure out who we're going to pair with these pitchers. Obviously, we got to go to the Astros. I'm not going to give you guys anything else. I always trust the Astros. Zach King, listener to the show, tweeted at me, 4-man Astros stack plus Godley, cash. It's done. It's over. 4-man Astros stack plus, 4-man's Astros, 4-man Astros stack plus pitcher of your choice equals you'll probably cash. Especially against Miguel Gonzalez in this ballpark. What did they end up with? 4 home runs in that lineup? Yuli had one. Marwin had one. No, did Marwin have one? Yuli had one. Jose Altuve had one. And then somebody at the bottom of the order had one, I think. At least three dingers in that lineup. The Astros, you know, they're just, why not? Against Miguel Gonzalez, you know, we have to go here. Gonzalez has a 40% fly ball rate to lefties and righties. He's got a 35% hard contact rate to left-handers and 30% to right-handers. He's bad. He barely made it through the second inning against the Red Sox. The Red Sox, we know, the only comp that they have with the Red Sox, the Astros, is really their hard contact rate. And they have very similar hard contact rate. That's really good news, okay? The Red Sox just aren't that productive because they don't hit home runs. So, okay, fine, you get an Astros team that makes similar amount of hard contact and just hits home runs. Now, then, okay, great. Take the home runs. Obviously, it's going to start with the inexpensive leadoff guys. Now, so this whole Springer thing, I thought he was coming back yesterday to scramble when he didn't get in the lineup and readjust every single one of my lineups. But Springer should be back. I do think, however, you're going to see Fisher and Reddick in the top of this lineup. I just don't see them. I think that they are going to start to rest some of these guys more. And I think that they are going to give Fisher the platoon edge to play outfield on. Fisher and Reddick are going to be the platoon outfielders against right-handers. Okay. And then they'll switch in some of the other guys during, you know, lefty days, you know, whether it's Mariznick or whatever the case may be. And you'll see Springer in as an everyday player, but I just don't see any reason not to play Fisher here. I think he's probably going to be up in the top half of this lineup against a lefty or against a righty. I could be wrong. I think you probably will see somebody get the day off. Marwin or Yuli, they've played a ton. They were playing in the outfield yesterday. I think they could easily get the day off. However, the ideal lineup for me, okay, the ideal lineup is in 1, 2, 3, 4, and some, I don't know, no particular order. Springer, Reddick, Fisher, Altuve, which I think is a very reasonable batting order. Okay, or Springer, yeah, Springer, Reddick, Fisher, Altuve, absolutely boner. 5-6, Marwin, Yuli. Okay, and then can we please put Evan Yadis back in the 7 hole? All right, can we please do that? 7, 8, 9, don't care. 1 through 6 is what I care about. Bregman could be in there too. Bregman was batting 7th for a long time, and maybe he will against a righty here in this situation, but he's been hitting really well, so they may keep him up too. I have no idea. But really, I mean, what I think that this happens is you get Springer back in center, Fisher and Reddick play the corners, okay? And then in the infield, 3rd is Bregman. He gets back to his normal position. Shortstop, Marwin. 2nd is Altuve. 1st is Yuli. That's kind of how it's been, right? That is a filthy 7. That's filthy for the record, right? And then, you know, that's your 1 through 7. God damn it. I mean, it just unbelievable. There's no defensive weakness. There's no offensive weakness there. These guys are just too good. And Carlos Correa is still injured. What? Like, what do you do? Who do you tell to sit down? These guys are too good. Gonzalez has a four-seamer that's a problem. He also has a slider. If Yuli Gurriel is in the lineup, he's underpriced. He hits both of those pitches. I think he's a great play here for you. Remember, Marwin and Yuli both hit righties better than they hit lefties. But Fisher and Reddick as the lefties here in this situation versus Gonzalez are definitely in play. But Gonzalez, the fly balls come righties and lefties. The splits for the Astros are pretty even. I think you attack the order and the cost. You try to do a cost-benefit analysis based on your current lineup situation. You get as many of these Astros in there as possible and still feel good about the rest of your lineup, right? I think that's what you do. Because it's hard to predict home runs, but it's very hard. I've run into this a couple times when I'm stacking the high-priced Astros, right? It's probably less of a benefit to try and get Springer and Altuve and Bregman, three 4K players in your lineup, and a decent pitcher, and then punting everything else. That's not as much of a good idea as it is to get, say, one of those guys and take Reddick, Fisher, or take, you know, Altuve plus Yuli and Reddick, right? A couple 3K guys with moderate prices, so you save $1,000 and you don't have to punt every single position. I mean, the difference is that if you're spending three players, if you're going to spend 4K on three different players, right, versus 4K on one player, you're talking about $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 in savings. Where that adds up is, okay, I'm going to take one punt outfielder, right? One Albert Almora, one whatever the case may be, one of those jokers. Now I don't have to take a second one, right? I can take a $3,200, $3,500 guy who is in a reasonable position that correlates with the rest of my stack, right? Or you don't have to punt second base. You don't have to play, Tim Anderson or something stupid like that. You know, you can avoid punting a whole position. And that's important. You create floor by not having to punt. So that's kind of how you approach roster construction with these high cost teams. By the way, the Yankees against Pech, they're expensive, but they're definitely in play. Obviously Gardner, Frazier, great leadoff options. And Aaron Judge has been striking out a lot. I don't think you have to play him right now. If you want to be the guy who, you know, gets the slump busted, fine. DD, not a bad play. Shortstop at 3.4K. I have no problem with that. Of course, Gary hits righties better than lefties. So if you want to spend up a catcher, you'll be very different on this slate. Other than that, I'm a little bit cautious of the Yankees these days. Although I do love Clint Frazier at that price. That's the other high price offense. Okay, now moving on to some grout type options. I love the Rays Sox game. I want to attack this game. Yes, I have Rays bias. If you want to fast forward through my Rays bias, go for it. Fast forward through it. I don't think you should. Okay, the Rays have struggled against right-handers recently. Yes, it's true. They struggled against Chris Sale last night, I guess, a little bit. Both sides of this matchup, though, are very good. You have two right-handers who give up way too many fly balls and way too much hard contact. Ballpark is bad, but I think that we have to consider both of these pitchers as targetable. Okay, every Rays bat that you can think of has hit a home run off of Rick Porcello at some point in their career. Some more than others, but everybody. Brad Miller has destroyed Porcello over the years. Okay, he is one of the best BVP models that there is. Lomo, Corey Dickerson, 200 ISA, and Wobo over 300 against Porcello. And let's not forget, Lucas Duda smashes four-seamers and two-seamers. He's got an over 300 ISO against left-handers, against right-handed pitching. If I had my way, this would be an, this is the Rays fan, 8 runs in 3-inning affair for the Rays, 8-0, right out of the gates. Let's go, Rays. Show the Red Sox that we're still here. Wild card in the AL East is not up for grabs. The Rays are not going to falter, but I just don't know if that's going to happen. They're cheap. They're powerful. Longoria's 3,100. Brad Miller's 2,600. Corey Dickerson's price is down. Corey Dickerson at 3,400. Logan Morrison at 3,200. Steven Souza, still very, very expensive. Okay. Very, very, very expensive. Wilson Ramos, man, $2,000 for a guy who can leave the yard is too cheap. He is ice cold right now, but he is very cheap. Lucas Duda at 3,700, that's not a perfect price, but it's feasible. Like, the Rays are not that expensive. You can get a four-man Rays stack, Dickerson, Longoria, Morrison, Brad Miller, the most that you've spent is 3,400 for a leadoff batter with home run upside, right? Against Rick Porcello, who got smashed by the White Sox. So it's definitely in play. It's definitely in play. The tough part is do you play Duda or do you play Dickerson? I think either one is fine based on how much salary you have if you want to stack the Rays. Red Sox side is very clearly in play, obvious. You know, Odorizzi coming back off the DL. He was on the 10-day for a back thing. And he's just struggled with fly balls and hard contact. He really has, you know. And that's why Vegas has the Red Sox favored in this situation. I think Odorizzi, he's definitely targetable. And the targets, Pedroia has owned him throughout the years. He's got a 300 ISO, three dingers off of him. He's owned him over the last 2 years. And makes sense. He hits the cutter. And Odorizzi throws a cutter. So Pedroia in play. And then really the only other two pieces that I would be that interested in are Devers and Nunez. I mean, they're just like, that's the whole offense right now. Right? I mean, yeah, Betts, obviously Mookie Betts is good at baseball. But I want to pay 4-1 for a guy who, you know, doesn't always hit home runs if he's not in Fenway. Not really. I think that's too much to pay. And the same with Benintendi, 3,800 for Benintendi, who, you know, has he had some big games? Yeah, he's had some big games, but I just don't think he's like a must have at 3.8K. Like, if you give me 3.8K to spend, I'm going to go find a home run. Like in an outfielder, like I'm going to go find a home run. Like, I will take Josh Reddick over that. Give me Cody Bellinger. Give me Cody Bellinger for 3.8K. You're going to spend the same amount of money on Andrew Benintendi as you are on Cody Bellinger in Chase Field. I don't care if he's going up against Granky. Like, Cody Bellinger is less expensive than Andrew Benintendi. Like, you have to think about this. Obviously, positional scarcity is a thing. There's way more first baseman you can hit home runs. Outfielders, there's plenty, but I just, there's something to be said for that. So I think it's Nunez, Devers. They are just both. The entire offense in the last month, over 200 ISO and 400 WOBA in this last stretch where they've been. So those two are really must-haves if you're going to stack the Rays or the Red Sox. And then I think, you know, you take whatever pieces you can fit in there. Obviously, Mookie's an elite play. He's always a great baseball player, but he doesn't hit home runs. So you don't have to have him. The Brewers versus Bortolo, you guys would turn my podcast off if I didn't talk about playing a home run team versus Bartolo Claus. Okay, the whole world is going to play this game because Thames and Shaw are ridiculously cheap. They're going to go after Bartolo. It's just too obvious. You can play whatever pitcher you want, and then you can play Thames and Shaw, and then you could probably even play Altuve and Springer in the same lineup. Like, you can. Like, it's just they're too cheap. There's too much home run upside. Obviously, Bartolo has terrible metrics. Not striking out anyone. So many fly balls. So much hard contact. The question is this. Are they going to get to Bartolo? The Rangers couldn't do it. The Rangers let him go nine innings 9 innings. 40-year-old man pitched 9 innings against a big league ball club and only gave up 3 earned runs. This guy has experience. There's a reason that people are paying him to start baseball games, because he knows how to manage innings. And the Twins said this when they acquired him. They thought something was wrong with his arm slot that was affecting his location. Did they fix it? Maybe they did, because since he has gone to the Twins, he's had multiple quality starts. He's never given up more than 3 runs. 4 starts. He pitched the Dodgers. He's pitched against Texas. He's pitched well. Obviously, just on paper, Thames and Shaw and Braun, or Braun especially, has just smashed him over the years, by the way. BVP there for Ryan Braun, no doubt. They're amazing plays on paper. But I just, is Bartolo going to do, you know, the lump of coal? Is Bartolo Claus going to leave you a lump of coal, because he left us a lump of coal on last Friday? He is not getting blown up. It's just not happening. I don't know what to say. He didn't get blown up by the Dodgers. He gave up 2 home runs, but he only gave up 3 runs total. Like, it's a thing. He's pitching half decently. It's the whole Andrew Cashner thing, you know, like terrible numbers, but not getting blown up. He just soaks up innings and doesn't put the team in a hole. There's these guys that can do that, and it's a skill. It is a skill. I really do believe that. I think that big league pitchers, it's the combination of deception, timing, location, knowing your situation. Bartolo obviously has the experience to do that. So if you want to stack the Brewers, here's what you do. Thames and Shaw, Thames 3,000, Shaw 3,400, Sogard almost mid in price. If he's leadoff, you take him and you add Ryan Braun. Sogard and Braun balance out each other as far as price goes. Thames and Shaw reasonably priced, underpriced. Somebody's going to hit a home run, because one of those guys, Thames, Shaw, Braun, could hit a home run. But who knows? Could be, Orlando Arcia. I don't know. But I do know this. This is one of the roughest offenses baseball in the last 30 days, okay? 30% strikeout rate. No one on this team is striking out less than 20% on this team in the last 30 days. They are swinging at everything because they're feeling desperate. They know they're going to lose the division to the Cubs. They're 29th in WRC plus in the last 14 days. Just an indication. I know it's not a normalized stat over that very, very small sample size, but my point is that they're just an indication that they're cold. They're cold right now, and they are chasing. They're striking out constantly. Yes, they're going to go home. Yes, that's a great ballpark for lefty power. I'm sure that they're ready to be in a nice homestand and, you know, use Miller Park to their advantage. And there's going to be some games when they blow up and they go, all right, Brewers are back. Will this be it against Bartolo? I'm not sure. So I think I'm going to probably go Astros in cash over Brewers in cash. And I will, sure, you got to have a Brewers lineup, because if they blow up Bartolo for 2 home runs in the first 4 innings and then work on the Minnesota bullpen for the rest of the game, that's a really big deal. Like, you need those. That could be a slate winner. But I don't know. I don't know if it is. Okay. 2 other stacks that are interesting to me. A couple other notes that are interesting to me. Pivots from away from the crowd. Low ownership options here. Padres versus Asher Wojciechowski. There are people touting Asher Wojciechowski against the Padres. Fine. You know what? Everybody touts a pitcher against the Padres. It's what you do. It's part of the industry standard. Padres are playing great. Well, we're pitching against him. Okay. I'm not going to, the last 2 games, these guys have taken massive advantage of this park. The home runs, they've hit, you know, 4 home runs, 5 home runs over the last 2 days. They've scored multiple runs in both games. I think they won both games. If I'm correct, they won last night. It just doesn't make sense for me to play Wojciechowski. He is a reliever. So if you look at his numbers on FanGraphs, you're looking at his numbers as a reliever. All the cumulative innings pitched are his reliever numbers plus his starter numbers. He hasn't started since June. Okay. And when he started, he was very mediocre. okay? Massive fly ball rate, 5 XFIP, 2.4 home runs per nine, and a 20% strikeout rate. Sounds a lot like my boy Tim Adelman, a righty who gives up fly balls and pitching in Great American, who has, you know, some decent strikeout stuff. Sounds a lot like Tim Adelman. I think you go right back and you look at Margot and Perella. I think Perella is just, he's still just so underpriced. Asuaje is going to be probably batting second or third. He is a cheap second base option. Will Myers is cheap. Yandrivis Solarte is in there. He's at second base, so you kind of have to decide between Solarte and Asuaje. Austin Hedges is a great punt catcher. I had him everywhere against Adelman, and then last night was the night he went yard. Frustrating. I play him a lot just because I know he's home run or bust. He's one of those punt catchers is home run or bust, like Chris Iannetta, who last night I was like, okay, a lefty versus Maeda. Who is going to be catching for the Diamondbacks? It was Iannetta, and I didn't think to play him. It was annoying because you take advantage of that ballpark. The thing that I always do, by the way, that's, and by the Barnhart also homered. If you're punting catcher, go to the best ballpark on the slate. Just go to the best ballpark. Try to find, you know, either go to Chase or Great American in this case, and just play your catcher from there. Because the productivity historically comes in those places where it's easy to hit home runs, and those guys can take advantage of that park. You know, you don't have to be a perfect hitter, and a lot of catchers aren't perfect hitters. They're buried in the lineup. They get one good swing on a ball, bam. That's what happened. It happened last night. Both catchers homered in Great American, and Iannetta homered in Chase. Yadi did not homer in Chase. But yeah, Padres. I'm not doing it. No, this isn't cash game necessarily. Maybe I'd pay Perella in cash as my punt because he's been so productive lately. But I'm not playing Wojciechowski, and I'm just don't trust him. I just don't trust him in this situation. Too many fly balls against a team that's hot, that's taken massive advantage of this ballpark. It doesn't make sense to me. The Padres strike out. Sure, there's strikeout upside in every pitcher that faces the Padres, but there's also downside in a guy who, you know, could give up 3-4 runs very easily within the first four innings. And as a reliever, just doesn't have the stuff to get into the sixth. There's just no reason to play him, especially when you have really other good options who are actually capable as starters of getting deep into the game, who have better ballparks behind them, like Woodruff, Newcomb, and McHugh. Like, there's just no reason to play Wojciechowski when you have those other options. You can figure out how to, you know, the bats work. Two other notes. One, St. Louis, Kansas City just goes completely underowned. Okay. Mike Leake has figured out kind of how to not get it blown up, and Kansas City's priced up. So I don't necessarily think that we have to do Hosmer Moustakas. They're really expensive right now against Leake, but I think the St. Louis side is interesting. I think that, you know, Yurko is underpriced and he finally clicked on a ball last night. Tommy Pham is reasonably priced. What's his name? The shortstop, reasonably priced. I think the St. Louis stack goes under owned. Dexter Fowler is just underpriced. So if you get Yurko and Fowler for salary relief, you can basically take, DeJong. You could take DeJong and Pham. You could take Carpenter and Pham. You could take DeJong and Carpenter. Doesn't matter. Okay. Doesn't matter. You could take all those guys. And Cahill, as good as Cahill was the beginning of the year, Cahill in his last three starts, just home runs, giving up fly balls, getting hit pretty hard. His K rate is way down. It just fell off a cliff. Right before he was traded. 4%, 10%, 13%, where it was hovering in the 20s and almost 30s at times. You know, his last couple starts, could he bounce back here? Sure. But like, he's just struggling. And I don't know if it's arm fatigue or what the case is, but you want to attack a pitcher kind of when he's down, before everybody knows. And I think that the St. Louis stack is definitely in play here and will go overlooked. Dodgers Arizona will go under owned too. Super low total, two big name pitchers. People just don't want to risk it. They'd rather spend on a sure thing. So in tournaments, you could just game stack the desert and punt pitcher, and it could be a slate winner. I mean, Jake Lamb was a slate winner last night at his price. He was absolutely a slate winner. My Jake Lamb lineup is my one GPP lineup that really hit. Jake Lamb and the Phillies. Underowned. Odubel Herrera at 0.07%. Ryan Healy at 1%. That was in another lineup. Yonder Alonso at 2%. People don't play the West Coast games. They just don't. They don't. The Astros at 50%. I mean, pivoting is not hard in this game, guys. Everybody plays the same people. Everybody plays the same people. So, you know, use that to your advantage. All right, that said, let's jump over to FanDuel. Let's figure out how to throw together a lineup today. All right, so there's a few, like, point per dollar plays positionally that I want to go over that I just don't want you guys to overlook. At catcher, like, this is just discount plays that you should keep in your mind. And, I don't do this that often, but if Hector Sanchez is in the lineup for San Diego over Barnes, he's a killer. The guy can hit the ball really hard. So he may get that over Barnes because Barnes has played two games in a row. It may just be a maintenance day. He's free, $2,000. Wilson Ramos, free, $2,000. Those are my two favorite punt catchers. And then, of course, Tucker Barnhart Tucker Barnhart is down there at 2,200 as well. So it's just paying down for catcher, very, very much in play. The highest that I will pay for catcher is usually about 2,500, 2,400 in this case. So those guys are in play. First base value, Will Myers at 2,900 is Will Myers and Eric Thames at 2,900 is just highway robbery. Jesus Aguilar may be in there as well. But those two, it's just unbelievably cheap. I don't have to tell you that those are really, really good prices. Logan Morrison at 3,200, also a really, really good price. That's about as far as I'm going to go with the first baseman. Second baseman values, below 3K. Solarte, Asuaje, Brad Miller. Brad Miller, so cheap. Brad Miller is in there. And Eric Sogard at 2,200. Like, you have to play Eric Sogard at 2,200 if he's batting leadoff against Bartolo. Like, you get a low strikeout guy against a low strikeout pitcher, just going to be base running. It's just, he doesn't have to do much to produce value at that price. Third base value, Jed Yurko really stands out at 2,700. I think he's in an excellent position here. The day that Nick Castellanos is in play again is a really, really good day. And Evan Longoria at 3,100, I think that's a great play. And then, just above that, the fact that Jake Lamb, Rafael Devers, all the way up to Travis Shaw, like, this 3,200 to 3,400 range is just unbelievable. Like, this is unbelievable. You have home runs, like, for all four of these guys in the cards from 3,200 to 3,400. All the way up to Anthony Rendon at 3,400. Like, I really don't see a reason today at third base that you have to pay more than $3,400. I think, give yourself a little bit of a budget there, and just go with that. Go with that and feel good about it. That's third base. It's shortstop. One of the best values in the slate, Zach Cozart at 3,300, batting second against Travis Wood. He smashes lefties and small ballpark. Like, I'm going to probably play Cozart everywhere. I love Zach Cozart. He's really consistent. He's a shortstop with home run upside at 3,300. He's just worth that price on this slate. Absolutely in play. And then, you know, right at $3,000 or below, against, you know, David Peralta, if he's bad, well, he won't bat leadoff in this situation, but Derek Fisher, really good price. Billy Hamilton, still really, really good price. Corey Dickerson, I said, at 3,400. Dexter Fowler, 2,800. One of the cheapest plays on the board. Price per dollar is just excellent there. Hernan Perez, if for some reason he's in the top five of this Milwaukee lineup, even the six hole at 2,600, he's a good play. He's a possible home run play. That's about it. I think down there, you know, and Perella and Jose Perella, obviously Jose Perella let me check his price here. Yeah. 2,700. He's a great play there too. So, cause lots of value, like you can play your favorite stud, on this slate. No question in my mind, you can play your favorite stud bat on this slate. So, you know, like I said, I'm going to attack a couple pieces here. I'm going to absolutely attack Houston, and I'm going to go Springer, Reddick. Okay, I want at least two pieces of this offense. If Fisher is in the lineup, top half of the lineup, I'd be thrilled. But I'm going to go straight after Zach Cozart and Tucker Barnhart there in Cincinnati against Travis Wood. Small ballpark. I love Zach Cozart in the two hole. I think he's a great home run upside play. He's going to be my plug at shortstop. I love him today. And then I'm going to probably at third base, you know, I said, I'm not going to spend more than 3,400. And the question is do you go with Rendon versus Conley? Do you go Shaw versus Bartolo? Or do you go Devers versus Odorizzi? You can't play Jake Lamb against the lefty. I think that's probably out of play, or even Longoria against Porcello. And the question really comes down to, where do you want to stack? So if I go to Shaw at third base, then obviously I'm going to go over to Thames and I'm going to use him right there. And that gives me second base outfield. And I would probably do a little Brad Miller, Corey Dickerson pairing right there. And that's kind of a nice second base, third base, or second base outfield piece there. Or, you know, I would go with Fisher in that situation. I just think Brad Miller is underpriced in the six hole at 2,600. Is he a great baseball player? No, but his metrics against Porcello indicate that, you know, he's in a good spot tonight. So if I go Thames Shaw, that's where I would be there. If I don't go Thames Shaw, then, you know, okay, let's look at the Red Sox possibility here. Let's say I go Devers, and then I go with Pedroia, because, ooh, wow, they moved. By the way, they have moved, what's his name? The San Francisco Giants guy. Now a Red Sox player. Where did they move him to? So shortstop? Nunez. Yeah, Nunez is the highest priced shortstop on the slate at 3,500. That's insane. God, shortstop is loaded today. Corey Seager, 3,500 against Zach Greinke in the desert. What? Sometimes the pricing on FanDuel is just unbelievably difficult to manage. Like, it makes the game almost in. Like, the research edge that you get just isn't there, because you can play pretty much whoever you want. Sometimes that's frustrating. But I also like FanDuel's interface a lot more than DK, which I've been dabbling in, which is fun. So, yeah, Pedroia, Devers, and then, you know, one outfielder here. I think you go right to that $3,000 range, which, like, a Chris Young or a Jackie Bradley to complete that, or even a Derek Fisher to complete that. You know, and I could go with a guy like, what's his name? Mitch Moreland, right? Okay, so Mitch Moreland, three man, and then I could go with Fisher in the outfield. So like a Mitch Moreland, Dustin Pedroia, Rafael Devers, Zach Cozar, Josh Reddick, George Springer, and Derek Fisher. If Derek Fisher is up in the lineup again, I think he could be. I'd have to spend down off of Tucker Barnhart, but that's fine. I can do that. I can do that down to $2,000. And this is all with Tanaka, by the way, at the top. So that works. I mean, there's a million and one ways you can go, but you really have to find your favorite offense, and you have to figure out, I think, from a ballpark perspective, which offense you really feel like is going to pop. And I think, you know, the other thing you can do is you can do a full, White Sox. Obviously, that's the Sean Cain special, Rays and White Sox, or Rays and Astros. I just think there's a lot of ways that you can go today, guys. You know, get some Astros in your lineup. Reddick and Springer are expensive. I think the value Astros that you attack, if they're available to you, are Marwin and Fisher, and then Reddick, obviously, and Yuli. Reddick and Yuli are the same price at 3,700. I think Zach Cozart is just such a good spot today. I just love Zach Cozart in this place, in this spot. Yeah, and like if I get, I'm just thinking, like you can, I could go with the Nationals stack too, like Ryan Zimmerman and Anthony Rendon. Like I can do a full Nationals Astros. Let's see if I can get Howie Kendrick in here. Oh, it's Howie Kendrick has a little back injury. Let's say he plays at 2,500, right? I can go Zimmerman, Rendon, Reddick, Springer. This is interesting. Let me try this. Hold on. Let me try the full. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. That's insane. So listen to this. Okay. This might be the move. Okay. This is actually, I just found this little nugget. Tanaka, three man Nationals, Zimmerman, Rendon, Kendrick. It's Kendrick against Conley. We didn't talk about it, but Conley's not that good. I don't know if I trust the Nationals, but they're priced really well. And then Altuve, Reddick, Fisher. That's if Fisher is in the lineup, of course, in the top half of the lineup. I love him. Even in the sixth hole, I would take him in the sixth. Zach Cozart, Tucker Barnhart with Masahiro Tanaka at the top. Three-man Nats, three-man Astros. Two Cincinnati bats. That's really nice with Tanaka. I love that. So I'm going to hold on to that one, actually. And assume that there's going to be some regression coming for the Nationals, that they're going to bounce back. And I'm just going to play Zach Cozart everywhere. I've said that enough. All right. Good luck in your contest, guys. I will see you mañana.